Journalist Michael Ruhlman managed to infiltrate one of America's most mysterious institutions, the CIA, or the Culinary Institute of America. He came away knowing how to peel 50 carrots in record time. In his new book, The Making of a Chef, Michael Ruhlman describes the 81-week course of study at this gastronomic boot camp, which is also the leading professional cooking academy in the country. Ruhlman joined a group of new recruits at the CIA and attended classes, starting with the first kitchen skills course, on through meat fabrication, seafood cookery, Asian cuisine, bread, and wines. He writes that he uprooted his wife and newborn daughter, moved 500 miles to live in one room above a garage in order to learn how to make a superlative brown veal stock. I asked him what he learned on his first day at the CIA.
The first day in any kitchen, you learn the kitchen first. You'll walk around the kitchen and the chef will show you where the steam kettles are, where the flats are, where the pans and pots are. After that, we began first by roasting veal bones. And then we peeled a carrot. And that is where you begin.
You peeled a carrot? Did you know how to peel a carrot?
I had peeled many carrots before in my time, but there was something fascinating, even in peeling a carrot, to learn economy of motion in order to peel 50 carrots and peel them faster than your dishwashers or faster than any of your other cooks was important. So it was an idea to economize motion and effort and increase speed, which is what so much of cooking, professional cooking, is about.
How do you correctly peel a carrot?
Well, you properly peeled carrot. The base of the carrot is, we were using these big horse carrots that are about a foot long, and the base is about 2 inches thick. And so you put the base on the cutting board, and you rotate the carrot as you are peeling. So you're not holding your carrot; your wrist isn't getting tired, and it works quite nice. It's hard to demonstrate verbally, but it works quite nicely in your own kitchen.
Now, this whole issue of sauce, and
it's,
I guess you
one.
Should say stock. Yes, it reaches just mythological proportions in your book. There seems to be a whole philosophy and history of stock, which is, of course, is the soup base for creating sauces that I think most of us who haven't worked in a kitchen have no idea about. What are these various camps and issues in the stock wars?
Well, everybody has their own way of making stocks and their own beliefs in stocks, and some people roast their bones, and some people make a white stock. If you roast your bones, you're going to get a caramel color, and you're going to get some caramel sweetness in your stock. If you don't, you're going to have a more neutral and pale-looking and flavored stock, but one that can take on any number of flavors that you want to add to it later. I like brown stock, and then one would move from brown stock to this kind of sauce you will make from that stock, and here is where the war begins, and the war began at the CIA, a minor skirmish on roux and what color one made one's roux to. Was it a blonde roux to make a brown sauce or a brown roux to make a brown sauce?
Here I have to interrupt you. Roux is the thickened stock,
roux is a mixture of fat. No, it's roux is a mixture of fat and flour. And roux is added to stock added to roux in order to thicken that stock.
Now, this is French cooking. And
yes.
Here in America, there's some French restaurants, but there are plenty of restaurants all over the country making sauces. Are they making sauces the same way?
Are they
based on this French cookery? Is it relevant to what's going on in American restaurants?
A lot of people wonder about that, and I think it's very relevant. Virtually every professional kitchen is using some veal stock. Some people will use a brown veal stock. Some people will use a white veal stock. Nothing beats it for flavor and body. It can take on myriad flavors, anything that you want to bring to it. It's just a great canvas on which to put flavors. To learn the properties of veal stock is essential for a young cook, because without a proper veal stock, you cannot make a good sauce.
the model for the CIA seems to be what a medical intern or resident goes through. The place never closes. The courses are in 3-week installments. You begin one course immediately after you end the last 3-week group. And it sounded as if you and your fellow students were there at least 12 hours a day.
That's everything you said is accurate. It's a miracle of organization, that place. It never shuts down, almost never shuts down, for snow or any other reason. It's just everything is locked into place, and you step through this regiment as the person ahead of you did and as the person behind you did, and there is always someone who will be coming in behind you, and you will always be following somebody else through the whole course. It's in order to all those classes that I listed or mentioned, those many classes, it has to be this orchestrated in order to do it officially. Otherwise, the whole thing would fall apart, I think.
It seems as if every teacher at one point in every class asks the students to ask themselves, what does the food want to be? What do they mean?
Only a couple would do that. One in gastronomy would do that. He encouraged the students to think Socratically about food in order to perhaps come up with new ways of combining foods. I think that at the CIA, most chefs would not say that. They would say they would want the student to focus on a fundamental rather than on some sort of esoteric and abstract idea of what the student wanted food to be or what he thought the food needed. Then again, a chef will ask you, is this soup or is this chicken or is this broccoli? Is this green bean properly seasoned? And that is fundamental. Knowing when something's, and when I say seasoned, I mainly mean salted. Is it properly salted? You should not taste the salt, but you should understand the effects of salt so that when you taste a green bean, you understand that its full flavor is coming out because the water has been properly seasoned, and the bean therefore is also properly seasoned.
Now, when I have people over for dinner, everything is just a mess in the kitchen. The things don't get done in time or not all at once. Everything's ready at a different time. I walk around the kitchen looking for things and forgetting what I wanted to do next. Efficiency seems to be the key to cooking. How do would-be chefs learn that? How do you teach that?
That's a good question, because I was that person you just described. I was a mess, and my kitchen was a mess, and you are right. Efficiency is the name of the game. When you are cooking professionally, you've got you're prepping for, I don't know, depending on the restaurant, 100, 200, 300 covers that night, and you've got a lot of food to get out, so you can't waste any time. You learn efficiency from day one by keeping your board clean, from cleaning up after yourself, from working clean all along, and that is drilled into you every step of the way, so that by the end of 2 years, it is just natural, or it ought to be natural for you to keep your station clean. It just is a matter of course, because it's been drummed into you. So you learn it slowly by degrees and by being yelled at.
It's interesting that all of the chefs at the school describe their profession as being incredibly physically demanding. Now, when you look at a chef, or what I don't think of chefs as being marathon runners or being particularly in top shape. What do they mean by that?
Many of them are. Many of them are very thin, believe it or not, because they don't eat, because they're working all the time. They're around food all the time. You stop eating. I lost a lot of weight working in kitchens. They mean it's physical. You're lifting heavy things. You've got big stock pots you're lifting. You're carrying around 50-pound bags of potatoes and onions. You are, if you're on the line cooking for service, you're in temperatures of 120 to 150 degrees for, say, between 2 and 6 hours. And you're moving fast. And in order to do this, you've got to be clear-headed. You have to be athletic in your in your mean. Otherwise, you'll collapse. You just can't do it. You have no choice. You must be able to withstand a certain amount of heat, pressure, and at the same time keep your mind clear enough to cook 30 or 40 or 50 meals an hour.
It's kind of a mystery to me what happens in the kitchen of a restaurant before the doors open for business, and that is certainly something you learn at the CIA. What is the prep? What's there before customers walk in?
Everything is cooked before the customer walks in. Most things are cooked or partly cooked. This is what one learns there, and it's important, and it's the only way that a restaurant can put out so much food so beautifully. It began in France, and so as far as we know, it remains the best, maybe only way to produce so many fine meals, so many fine plates of food in that short a time. So you learn to cook and shock your vegetables. Shocking is simply putting them in cold water so they stop cooking. When you do this, you've got fresh green beans that are ready for service. All they need to do is be reheated in a pan with some butter, however they can be put back into boiling water. But the point is they're cooked, and in order to get them ready for the diner takes 30 seconds.
So if you're the sauté station, say, that's your job, what's your day like? You have all the stuff that's cooked. What do you do?
You will have a number of meals that you're responsible for. Usually you will have to get all these components. You'll have to put all the components of, say, I don't know, between 5 and 15 meals together. You'll have to have the starch, the various kinds of potatoes that you'll be serving. You'll have to portion out your meats, and you'll have them on a tray. You'll have them at your station, in a lobo at your station, so that it stay cold. So as soon as you need the veal, it's pounded out and ready to go right in that sauté pan, so that the chicken is right there, so your fillets are right there. You've got your mise en place.
What is that?
Mise en place is a French term for put in place, but it's used widely in the industry and at the CIA, and means everything that you need to get the job done, in effect. A sauté cook's mise en place, his mise en place is all the components that he needs to produce all the meals that he is responsible for. It will be the vegetable for every plate that he does. It will be all the protein, all the meat that he does. It will be all the starch that he does. And they'll be in little hotel pans or little 1/6 pans all in front of them. People have open, many kitchens now have open kitchens. Many restaurants now have open kitchens. And if you walk by these open kitchens, you'll see a whole tray of stuff. There'll be cut up vegetables. There'll be asparagus. There'll be mushrooms. There'll be butter. There'll be sauces. And this is all part of the mise en place, and it's all the components of everything on that restaurant's menu.
How much actual cooking does the master chef do?
It depends. Some chefs just expedite, meaning they take the tickets as they come in and call off the orders and wipe the plates and make sure everything looks beautiful and keep the kitchen in order. Other chefs work the line. I watched John Schenck when he was at the Monkey Bar, and one of the students that I was working with was doing his extern there. Schenck worked the line. He was there cooking. Other chefs are not there cooking. It depends. There are about a million cooks, according to statistics that I read from the government. That's a lot of cooks. There are many different kinds of cooks, and we only seem to think about restaurant chefs as a cook, but hotels have cooks, and nursing homes have cooks, and corporations have cooks, and prison systems have cooks, and chefs. When I say cook, I mean chef, too. I'm skeptical of the word chef. I think it's overused and used. It now carries with it too many trappings of celebrity, and it ceased to mean what it used to mean. So when I say cook, I mean cook in the highest way. A good cook is a term of respect when I use it.
After you finished writing the book, you went to work as a line cook, mm-hmm. for a couple months, right?
4 months.
did you feel you just had to put into practice what you learned, or did you really have aspirations to make it in this business?
No, because it's really too hard. It's crazy. I'm not a lifelong cook. I did it because I had to see if I could do the work and do it for week, day after day, week after week. I did it because I need to keep writing about. I've become so fascinated by this world, this interior world of the professional kitchen, that I thought in order to continue writing about it, I needed to have experience there.
I want to thank you very much, Michael Ruhlman, for talking today on Fresh Air. It was fun.
It was fun. Thank you.
Michael Ruhlman's book, The Making of a Chef, recently won the prestigious James Beard Award in the category of Writing on Food.